Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's you, Jamie. Don't be alarmed, but I think there's a guy following you. Maybe we should get that guard dog we talked about? Nothing too scary. Maybe like a Bichon with an attitude? You know, Progressive's collision insurance covers injured dogs and cats at no extra cost, so... Wait, the guy stood up when I stood up. He's on the phone. He's looking right at me. Oh, wait, it's just my reflection. Don't tell anyone about this.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Pet coverage not available in New Hampshire and North Carolina.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
It is Locked On NBA. I'm David Locke, host of Locked On NBA, radio voice of Utah Jazz, and founder of the Locked On Podcast Network. So glad to have you aboard. Thanks for grabbing on. David Thorpe, the coach, ESPN's David Thorpe, with his unique insight into player development, franchises, the NBA, and all coming up. We talk about a lot of different things today. He's got a new book coming out at the end of February called Basketball is Jazz. I'm going to ask him about that right out of the chute. I'm really excited to read that from David. The other one I got to tell you, to be honest, is David and I recorded a podcast about 5-6 weeks ago, and I'm so mortified it kind of went into hyperspace and disappeared. So we're trying to redo some of that. It was just such a great conversation. A huge part of that was about Cousins. We actually didn't do that today. We talked a little bit about how serious problems are with LeBron, coaching style differences, players that he thinks look different today than they did before, some Minnesota and Portland stuff, Spurs, Warriors, player development, a lot of fun conversations in this with David Thorpe. Today's show is brought to you by Indochino. The made-to-measure suit company. I've enjoyed my experience with them. I'll tell you a little bit more about them as well. I've got a new sponsor in this time of year, obviously, matches for you with Valentine's Day coming up. I want you to learn about Bloom That. Bloom That does fabulous work for you. No hidden fees. They cut the roses on the order and the flowers on the order. It's really terrific. BloomThat.com/locked. Indochino is the same thing. Indochino.com/locked. And you can use the promo code locked with SeatGeek as well. So thanks to our three sponsors today. I'll tell you more about them as the show continues. Indochino, Bloom That, and our longtime friends with SeatGeek. $20 back on your first purchase, on your first ticket purchase with the promo code locked. All right. David Thorpe. Really fun conversation. Remember to subscribe to your local Locked On podcast. If you don't know about the Locked On Podcast Network, the Locked On Podcast Network is daily podcasts about your favorite NBA team. We have one for every single NBA team. Great hosts across the country covering your favorite NBA team with 15 to 22 minute podcasts each and every day. So make sure you subscribe to that, as well as thank you for subscribing to this and leaving 5 stars. Let's get it going. And not only is he particularly nice, but he's nice enough now to write a book and share a bunch of stuff with us. So, David, I'm excited to hear, and you know, Jazz fans are going to think it's all about the franchise. But so Basketball is Jazz, stories and lessons from a basketball lifer. This is end of next month. This has got to be incredibly exciting for you.
Yes, it is. Thank you for asking, David. It's a book I started writing about 8-9 years ago. I was driving. I did a lot of my training for 3 years down at the pretty well-known IMG Academy. It's about an hour and 20-minute drive south of me. And for three years, they let me kind of work my players out there and had a home sim and all that kind of stuff. And so in that hour and 20-minute drive or so each day, I would just kind of tape record stories and lessons on the game of basketball, from how to shoot it better and how to make layups. One example is I learned how to teach dribbling better from Jason Williams. You know, White Chocolate was in my gym for one summer. He was taking a vacation here in Clearwater for that summer. And his agent, who turned out to be Pete D'Alessandro, who, you know, one day was running the Kings not too long ago, and now I think in Denver, Pete was an agent, and he asked if Jason would work out with us. I said, sure. And he's the most incredible ball handler. He was, to this day, the best I've ever seen. And I said to him one day, what are you doing? How are you able to do what you do with the ball? And he's a real, you know, country, all shucks kind of guy. And he said, oh, coach, I'm just hammering nails. And that, to me, was like fireworks going off in my head, that the idea of the ball, when it leaves your fingertips and ball gets back in your fingertips, it's really a loose ball. And so the more control you have of the ball means the ball's in your hands more often. So therefore, if you're hammering nails, pounding the ball into the ground back in your hand, you can do more things with it because, again, you have control. When it's out of your hand, you have no control. So that's just something we've been teaching our athletes now. That's probably 15 years ago. So I just, it turned out I had a bunch of stories like that. And then my kids got real busy. And so I kind of took a time off. And this last year I said, you know what, let me get this book done. So I ended up coming up with, I think it was 106 kind of lessons and stories about playing the game better, coaching the game better, parenting the game better. I have a lot of people who ask me, what should they do with their 8-year-old son or daughter or 15-year-old, or when should they start with basketball? How do they find a better AAU program? What should they look for in a high school program? And so I deal with all of that in 106 chapters, 285 pages.
That sounds great. That'll be a lot of fun. What do you feel? Thanks. What do you think is the most teachable skill on an NBA level?
On an NBA level, well, probably the most teachable skill, if you look at a more general sense, would be the IQ part of it. And I don't mean, I look at IQ and feel as two different things. There are some guys who just naturally, you can give someone basketball, jazz, by both. You can give someone a piano or a trumpet or a saxophone, and some people can just play it, or a guitar. They don't know technically what they're doing. It just makes sense to them. And basketball, to me, that's feel. IQ is different. IQ is understanding of certain things, understanding of timing, when to square up, when to attack the middle, when to stay away, and those kinds of things. I think you can teach players the general part of the game, no matter what their background is, you know, more or less anyway. Obviously, there are some exceptions. And then the next thing I would say would definitely ball handling. There's no reason why you can't be able to put the ball down with either hand, change directions, change speed, backup dribble. These are things that really are not that technically difficult to master to some degree. And obviously, it's very, very helpful if you can be at an elite level at it. But if you're at least proficient in any position, you can help your team.
What's the skill if you see a collegiate or high school player that he doesn't have that you say, you know what, you're not in the speed of the NBA game, you're not adding that?
Well, I mean, the easy thing would be to say scoring. I'm as someone who watches the way I watch it, and now I've got a ninth grade son who plays pretty high level basketball here locally in Clearwater. Some guys can just score, David. They just, you know, Zach Randolph would be one of many examples. Blake Griffin, yeah, they have great bodies and length or athleticism. Everyone's a little bit different, but some guys can just put the ball in the hole. They have a feel and a knack for it, how to attack at angles, how to change their speed, how to use craft. It's just a feel part. And so I call those guys bucket getters. You know, some guys just can get buckets and always could. Jamal Crawford is a great example of that. Guy can just get buckets. The other thing I would say is passing. It's really hard. There's a certain feel aspect to the best passers where, yes, you can teach technically how to pivot, how to move the ball to certain spots of the floor to throw a pocket pass or to feed the post. But there is a general, what I call talent part of it, or feel part, where either they're going to figure that part out or they're not, no matter how much you teach them. And most guys don't have it. I think it's the skill that's most missing at every level of basketball is we just don't have enough good passers.
So, this is ironic. I mean, this is you and I went back and forth, and I sent a text to the topics, and of course, we're now off. You know, it's taken us a grand total of 5 minutes, and we are not on any of them yet. But so I actually have this theory about the league, and it's, you know, I'm stealing Gladwell a little bit, and I'm not sure if I really believe Gladwell. I probably believe Coyle's book better than Gladwell's about kind of, you know, elite athletes, yeah, and how you become elite athletes. But the one thing, mm-hmm, I think is really interesting is watching the players that everyone gets excited around draft time. They're not even like, and Jordan Hill is my classic example. So everyone was so excited about Jordan Hill because, I mean, he just started playing in high school and he hadn't played before. And look at how much more he has to go. And I feel like Mo Sene was another one who nobody ever remembers, Sayre Sene. I don't feel like those guys ever develop. I just think the league, if you're behind on 10,000 hours or whatever that number is, that's just the concept is really what I'm saying. When you enter the league, I feel like it's too hard to catch up.
Okay, so let's take that a step further. I've read some of the stuff from Coyle, but I've read every word Gladwell's ever written, I think, anywhere, and listened to most of his podcasts and interviews on YouTube or whatever. As with 15-year-old children now, there are taking my kids take Chinese and there's it's not easy. They're doing fine, but it's a challenging thing because they're 15 years old. And the story always is, if you expose kids at a young age to foreign language, they pick it up easier. And I think probably that's true. I don't know for sure because we only speak English in my house, and we didn't expose them to Chinese until they were, I think, 12 or 13. But I think basketball is very similar. And again, there's always going to be exceptions on both sides. At some point in your life, there's really a pretty concrete ceiling to what you can get to if you haven't already learned certain things already. Again, there are exceptions. Well, later on, we'll probably talk about, I'm going to probably bring up Minnesota and how young they are with Tom Thibodeau now as the coach. And I think those guys are so far behind, you know, what they should have learned in the previous couple of years, especially last year with Sam Mitchell. And I think Coach Thibodeau is going to get a lot more out of them. And I said that maybe a month or maybe 6 weeks ago even, and maybe we're seeing some signs now. We'll see. Time will tell. But I think, generally speaking, Jordan Hill is one of many examples, not just where he came into the league, which I think is an important point, but who is he playing for those first few years, right? We all remember Darko Milicic. I will tell you that I've never met an NBA player who teamed with Darko who didn't think he wasn't one of the most talented players they'd ever seen in their lives. So these are guys that I was talking to. These are American players. They're McDonald's All-Americans. They were national AAU champions and everything else. Top five and top 10 picks in the draft. In other words, they have been around incredibly talented players their entire lives. And Darko, to a man, blew them away. But he didn't really have the, I think, five-on-five game experience. He probably did more skill-level basketball academy-type stuff where he was from. And then he gets here, and he plays for Leah Brown, who has no patience for him whatsoever. And he sits and he sits and he sits. And at some point, that opportunity to take that next step is mostly gone. And so that's why I always say the best luck a player can have is who he gets drafted by. Where he goes to, who's coaching him, what is the system designed to do. I've said, I think even to you, David, I'm not sure Kawhi Leonard is just an average player if he's drafted by 15 or 20 teams in the league. He went to a place, and he went to a man who believed he could be special. Let's not forget that Popovich said, I think Kawhi was a rookie when he said, this guy is the future of our franchise. He was the number 15 pick, David. He couldn't jump. He jumped less than 30 inches, I think, up 2 feet in the pre-draft camp. He couldn't shoot coming out of college. He really was a man without a position that wasn't even an elite athlete. Who would say he's the face of the franchise? That goes into my whole Royal Jelly thing. I think they breathed so much spirit in him, but also created a landscape and a culture to help develop what he has ultimately become. Had he gone to a lot of other places that already had a starting level small forward and maybe not as much talent and spacing around him and so forth, he would have just been okay, probably. Obviously, he's a very hard worker, incredibly talented. I'm not at all taking anything away from him, but there is a good fortune that kissed him a little bit and has made him into an All-NBA player.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking about this week with the Jazz, with Hayward making the All-Star team and Gobert being in legitimate conversation about it. Like, that's incredible. Like, Gordon was not an NBA starter when he entered the league, right? Ninth pick, but he was a long way to go. And Rudy Gobert was a 27th. I mean, that's so much of what this league has become. And those two, I think, are out of the, you know, Dennis Lindsay's out of that Spurs lineage that seems to have figured some things out here on trying to get the royal jelly out of a player.
Right. Well, that's really what every franchise should be thinking about doing, because they can't all get lucky and draft in the top five every year, or even be in a situation where you draft top five and there's five great players to choose from. That isn't always the case. In some drafts, there just aren't that many real, real special guys or even all-star caliber players necessarily. I know for when I was watching Gordon play, I remember getting an argument with some scouts back when he was in his draft. I thought he was a two guard. I mean, when I say two guard, it means just a wing player. Twos and threes are the same to me. I felt he was a little bit more of an athletic version of Mike Miller. I saw Mike. I went to Florida, so, you know, I watched Mike play in college. And I thought that's who Gordon was, except I thought he was a little bit better attacking. Mike was just really more of a shooter. And I didn't really understand why people didn't think that's who he's going to be, just because he played power forward more or less in college or didn't handle the ball as much But that goes to having imagination. That goes to a credit to the Jazz for recognizing that this week he's going to be a perimeter player. He's going to be a guy that's hard to guard off the dribble. We're going to get him out in space a lot. We're going to let him attack people. You got to give guys chances to fail if they're ever going to ultimately succeed. And the Jazz have done that. And the same with Rudy. Rudy was certainly less capable than Gordon was coming in, and now he's the best defensive player in the universe.
It's incredible. I love watching these guys grow. And on the other one, I think we forget enough, and then we'll get to what we talk about, is how much the great ones grow. Right? Like James Harden is a lot better today than he was. Russell Westbrook is a lot better than he was. LeBron is a better, is still so awesome to watch every single time he plays. But those guys make enormous strides in their careers as well. Not as obvious. Because they were top three picks, but they all are vastly different players than they once were.
Well, no question. And so a couple quick things on that. One is I've been someone who's always defended the trade of James Harden, mostly because I know James Harden wanted to be traded. And he wanted to be traded because he knew he would never be the full player he could be playing with Westbrook and Durant. And I don't at all fault him for that. I don't at all suggest that he had an ego that said he wanted to make a $200 million sneaker deal one day. I think he wanted to see if he could lead the league in scoring. I think he wanted to see if he could be MVP of the league and be the best player on the championship team. And that's part of what makes an NBA player special is that thoroughbred competitiveness that's inside of them, that hunger to be the best they can be. And actually, one thing I know we're not going to talk about my book anymore, but one of my whole focal points of the book is to get people a kind of a peek behind the curtain as somebody who's been coaching NBA players now for 14, 15 years now. The amount of work these guys put in, the hunger they have, it never ends. There's exceptions to everything, but most of these guys eat intelligently, are careful what they do at night. They have a plan for their day, their week, their month, their season. They have a vision for it. And then they go about and acting that day to day. And so, yeah, of course, if you keep doing those kind of things, the work Harden has put in. LeBron, when he first came in the league, had no value whatsoever for where he caught the ball on the court. He just thought no matter where he caught it, he was going to go dunk on you. And over time, as he studied the game and failed a lot, he realized, well, if I catch the ball at 17 feet, I'm dunking in one blink of an eye. If I get it at 27 feet, it's taken three blinks and I got to go by four guys. So let me try to catch the ball more at 17 feet. And, that's one of many examples. These guys who work and work and work and study and study and study, if they can stay humble in the process as well, the great ones get to be the next level up, which is the best in the world.
Isn't Thorpe the best? Remember what I said at the beginning of the show that I screwed up last time and he did a whole podcast with me and then, oh my gosh, it kills me to even say this out loud. And then I lost it. Could you do me a favor? Could you send him a Twitter thank you at Coach Thorpe for doing today's podcast? I'd really appreciate it. Please send him his Twitter's at Coach Thorpe. Please just send him a thank you. It would mean everything to me because he was so nice to come back on and I'm still so mortified. More with David coming up in a second. Bloom That wants you to make sure you hit Valentine's Day out of the park. Bloom That. BLOOMTHAT. BloomThat.com/locked is the way to get the perfect Valentine's flower arrangement for your loved one. It's so convenient. It takes less than 2 minutes to sign up and order. And this is a neat company. There's no shortcuts at all. They don't do anything with your flowers until the order is placed. All the flowers are right outside of San Francisco, and the flowers are cut the day of the order, which means they last longer. Your surprise, your present, your sign of love lasts longer. The flowers are not in an assembly line. Every bouquet is handmade, and it makes a huge difference. No surcharges. They're not shortcutting you. They're not. Check it out. It's fabulous. It's bloomthat.com/locked. An exclusive offer to you. Already a great value, I may add. But the best price on a gorgeous bouquet, plus premium designer vase that normally costs about $15. That's included. 15% off, lowest price prices down for Valentine's Day. It's going to be great for you. And you get a designer arrangement for the same price as grocery store quality flowers, plus the premium vase included for free. So go to bloomthat.com/locked. Check out Bloom That. I think you'll be really, really impressed by the level of detail, no shortcutting, and everything you're going to have in your experience with Bloom That. Share it with me. Let me know how it goes. bloomthat.com/locked. So what is going on in the league right now? If you look at the 16 playoff teams as of last check, I don't know if it changed last night, there were only four of the 16 playoff teams that had won seven of their last 10 games. And if you looked at the 14 non-playoff teams, I think there were five teams that had won seven of their last 10 games. Is there something too late January where Toronto's lost 6 of 10, Cleveland's lost 6 of 10, Houston's lost 6 of 10. Is there any reason of why so many teams are scuffling right now in the league?
Well, yes, but I don't think there's any one reason, right? I mean, DeRozan missed a couple games, and that's, you know, had that not happened, maybe Toronto wins a couple more, and now they've won 6 of 10 instead of 4. I think Kevin Love is a really valuable player for Cleveland, and he missed some games. You know, we could kind of go that route. The other thing, and maybe the one common thread of all of it, is, as someone, you know, you cover this league closely for a long time now, we're getting close to the All-Star break. Guys are tired. And I don't just mean physically tired. To me, the emotional and mental grind of the season is every bit as exacting, if not more exacting, than the physical toll. And what that means is, when you're fresh as a player, you wake up in the morning, your body feels pretty good, if not really, really good, and you're thinking about your game, and you're thinking about your job, and what your responsibilities are, and what the game plan is. The same thing can be said for the coaches. When you're tired, when you're mentally fatigued, your mind can wander, it can get scattered, your body's not feeling as good, and I'm speaking about the coaches too. They may not practice so much. They may not ask as much in practice now because they know they can't get anything more out of their guys anyway. And so what happens is in some of these games that some of these teams are losing, that are the playoff teams, are losing the teams that aren't going to make the playoffs, that underdog team has a little bit more of a mindset of, hey, we can, you know, we're excited about this. And you might have some players too on those other teams that are getting opportunities. They're trying to make a team. They're trying to, you know, stick. A kid that I helped a couple last summer, a kid named Carl White, who was in the D League this year, was a great player. He was the Greek player of the year last year in that Greek league. He's helped Miami. They haven't lost a game, I don't think, since he's been signed. He's not scoring a bunch of points forever, but he is fighting for a real job. And he is playing as if every game is game seven of the championship. And I think some of those teams have that. But we know when it gets to April that the playing field is going to be level again. When we get to the playoffs, everyone's going to be equally focused as well as equally fatigued. And that's why you tend to see the same teams, you know, the best teams tend to win these series.
Do you have any concern? Cleveland's stretch right now is a little strange, right? I mean, I get that Kevin Love has missed some games, but LeBron's never lost this many games in a, I think, since his rookie year or something of the sort. I mean, they were 28-8 when they came to see us on January 10th, and now all of a sudden they're 35-15, right? I mean, are you at all concerned that they've lost 7 of 11?
Concerned in the sense that do I think they still are likely to win the East? I'm not so concerned about that. And it's not just that Kevin Love is missing games. He's just not the same player right now. I think when I looked last, he was averaging, you know, 22 a game in November, December, January. I think it's down to 14 and change, not shooting as well. I thought firing Blatt last year was a huge mistake. I thought they should have waited until the season was over because they were almost without question likely going to lose in the finals. And I thought it'd be great to use Blatt as a scapegoat. Obviously, it worked out incredibly, to me, fortunately for them. But I look stupid, they look smart, they won a championship. And Coach Lou, I think, did a better job this year early on of embracing Kevin Love in a way that Blatt never did. He didn't really seem to understand how to get three guys going instead of just two. And Lou's done a better job of that, and Love looked fantastic those first couple months. For whatever reason, that's not quite the same. I think mostly, I think probably it's physical as much as anything. But there's no reason to think they can't get that going. I mean, they are missing, you know, not having JR is a factor. There is a dearth of talent after those top positions. But I still don't think – well, first of all, LeBron is so incredible, and he's also a very inspiring leader to the guys on his team. And he's so empowered now, as evidenced by, you know, his outburst yesterday with Barkley. You know, this is a guy that really knows, you know, he's in the driver's seat. He's taken – he's just not going to be the politically correct guy anymore. I think he gets it, too, that even when he's a little bit loud and or opinionated, it plays well for his brand now. And I think that they're going to be, you know, they're likely to win the East, and we're not going to remember this stretch when we get to April and May.
They are 11, maybe 12 points worse per 100 possessions when Kyle Korver's on the floor, offensively, not defensively. It actually makes sense to me, David, because I love Kyle, and I know him personally, and so probably that's part of the reason I like his game so much. I also have just been a huge believer in he and the J.J. Redick types of the world, whose value is so much more than people realize. But Kyle Korver's not a catch-and-shoot spot-up shooter. He's a catch-and-shoot on-the-move guy, and you've got to almost give up that play to get him that look. And I'm not sure when you have Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, and LeBron James that that's always the best choice for you.
Well, I don't remember. I may have been Zach Lowe's podcast when he first got picked up. And I made the argument that we're not going to really know what they look like with Korver until we get much closer to the spring, where they actually have 7, 8, 9, 10, 15 practices in, mostly focused on how to fold in what Korver does best with what they already run. There's no reason why they can't do – no reason why they can't run actions where Kyrie or LeBron have the ball, and then one of those two are setting flare screens or pin-down actions for Kyle – and making a defense make that choice. They can do that now, but with practice, getting a feel for where guys want to catch the ball, where on the floor does want to be on the right side at a certain angle, where on the left side is a better angle. These are things that I think take time to figure out at the nuanced level that the Cavaliers play at. And that's one thing that I've been saying all along regarding an Achilles heel for Cleveland. I think they can turn the ball over some, because LeBron, I kind of liken LeBron to Tom Brady. When you just give him time to dissect, he's the best maybe that's ever played, certainly since Magic, at quarterbacking and offense. LeBron is, Chauncey Billups, I used to always say, had a kind of a RoboCop brain where he just processed things so fast in a pick and roll game and the elevator screen actions and stuff that they ran for Rip Hamilton. And Chauncey was brilliant. LeBron is too. And he's a better passer because he's taller, more capable, stronger, all those kinds of things, has a great imagination. And so they want to really just slow it down and let him read, figure it out. And I think defenses can bring chaos to that. And so now with Kyle, that's exactly what you're going to have to do is run some of those actions away from LeBron. Even if he's got the ball, the actions are away, and he's going to have to read what's going on. And I think he can be great at it. I also think that there's a way for defenses like Toronto is, I think, top two or three in the league in steals on defense. Not a great defensive team, but they can create some chaos there. I think they can disrupt them some, but I think over time they're going to get that smoothed out. And I just remember this, and I know you remember it well, when the Big Three first got to Miami, it took them a long time. Now, there was a lot of guys that had to all learn how to play together, but Cleveland's got a couple guys now that they've got to kind of figure it out together what to do, and it's just a process. And I don't think that there's even though LeBron has said some things publicly about we got to get better and this, that, I don't think they feel the real pressure, right? The real pressure that a team fighting for a playoff spot where jobs, coaches or managers may get fired, management may get fired if they don't win. I don't think Cleveland feels that pressure. They're kind of coasting to the top seed almost no matter what.
So with David in a second, we're going to talk about coaching philosophies. The Thibodeau kind of just yelling all the time versus the Luke Walton love fest. That's a little over-exaggerated on Luke. But you understand what I'm saying. It'll be interesting. But I don't know about you, but this probably won't surprise you. But I worry about how I look. I'm a little vain. And yet I don't have the financial resources to do the custom, you know, tailor that goes to his fancy place. And I don't have that. Like, it doesn't. I don't have, and yet I live in a world where everyone looks good and I'm trying to look good. Well, I think I have found the answer. It's Indochino. So Indochino makes made to measure suits rather than just grabbing generic off the rack stuff that doesn't fit me at all. I'm not even that unusually sized, but it doesn't look good. And so when I go to Indochino, I now have shirts and suits that are made to measure, detailed made to measure. I mean, it's really cool. You go onto the website. You choose from hundreds of fabrics, customize your lapel, your pleats, your jacket lines, everything you want. So it's really customized. And then they take this extensive measurements of every aspect of you, sit back, and what comes to you but a made-to-measure suit or made-to-measure shirt that's exactly for you and looks a lot better. You look good. And the price, it's great, because with the promo code LOCKED, Indochino.com/locked, Indochino.com/locked, or enter LOCKED at checkout, you get a premium Indochino suit for $389. Indochino.com, promo code LOCKED, any premium suit, $389, free shipping. If you can't have your like custom, you know, $10,000 suit with your tailor, which I can't, I'm guessing you can't, this is the answer. Custom, made to measure, so much better than generic off the rack, and you look good. All right, let's get back to coaching philosophies. The one thing that's been interesting to me this year, or watching around the league, is the different coaching styles. So early in the year, Luke Walton got all this love because he made it fun again. Now, maybe having Kobe off a team will make anything fun again, but just go with that for a second. On the flip side, when you call a game in the Target Center, their mics are unbelievably good. It's really fun. And Tom Thibodeau is relentless. I mean, it's every single possession. Relentless. And Minnesota's played great since we played him. I'm not going to lie to you. I left that building that night thinking, there's no way. Like, he might be the wrong fit for this, because as great a coach as he is, I'm not sure that those guys look like they're terrified to play. And yet they're getting better every day. Their defense was, I think, eighth or ninth in the month of January, so you're beginning to see it happen. What's your feeling on these two kind of opposite ends of the spectrum of coaching that we're seeing in the league right now?
So if I asked you who's in the modern era, who is the best coach in the NBA, you would say Greg Pop. I think you'd say Popovich. You could argue Phil Jackson.
If Dallas keeps winning, I might go back to Rick Carlisle.
Yeah, well, players love Rick Carlisle. So yeah, Rick's great. He's a little bit different. He's really, really special. Definitely in that elite level. But I'm going to use Pop as my example, and then for college, I would argue Krzyzewski, because what those guys do is all of it, right? They've got all of the nuance, all the complexities, all the sophistication, and they're brilliant motivators. And I really think that's what sets them apart. First of all, I've always thought Coach K as a motivator is the best coach we've had in my lifetime of any sport in terms of pure motivation. Belichick might be the best of all time regarding anything. Pop is right there, but Coach K, he just got his players to fight so hard, even if they hated him. And I've coached two players who didn't like him at all, but they played their butts off for him. I think that a guy like Thibodeau, I choose to believe in people like Thibodeau more than Luke, because you've got to teach these guys. I was saying to you before, basketball IQ, that's the thing we most can help our players. When I coach kids, I used to do a lot of pre-draft stuff, Dave. I don't do as much anymore. I'm just thinking, it's almost like teaching the same grad school class for 20 years. It's boring to me now. It's the same thing, because none of these guys know how to play. It's getting better. The college game's getting faster, and it takes the clock me moved up to 30 seconds. And so I think if I did some work these next couple of years with kids going into the draft, I would see an increased knowledge of the game. But up until this last year, they don't know anything. Even guys that have played, I've coached guys that were All-Americans in college. So these were great college players who just had no clue how to play the real game, the fast game, the read-react game. They weren't nearly as skilled as what they needed to be. You've got to teach them that. You've got to teach them when to drive, how to drive, what moves to use, how to set guys up, every little thing. Also, spacing. I once watched Stan Van Gundy on the practice floor, and, you know, he is going to be demanding of every inch of space on the court. I've not seen Tom Thibodeau in person do it on a practice court. I'm sure he's the same way. And I've argued that while it may be true that at some point down the road, he may lose his guys, which is what happened in some degree in Chicago, although I think there was other variables involved, starting with management and ownership or what have you. If management and ownership do a better job of making sure the culture overall stays positive, I think Minnesota's going to championship, because he is going to teach these guys every little thing. and how to be successful. And that is, that impacts, David, this is really important, that impacts the individual play. So the individual makes more money because he's more successful. If you build the right culture, he won't just think he was earning that on his own. He'll recognize that it was the entire operation that helps him make the money that he's making, which, you know, pays for his great-great-grandchildren's college one day or whatever, and the houses and everything else that he'll be able to afford. And to that, to some degree, to a large part, actually, they will believe in their coach because if they're getting value from it. And so as hard as Thibodeau might be, his players will respond because they're getting the things that they've always dreamed of, which is the money and the fame and the wins and the notoriety and all of that. Jimmy Butler, to me, never makes it to the level he's at now without Coach Thibodeau. That's just my opinion. And I think that he'll have the same effect there. Years ago, Jameer Nelson was really struggling as a player, and I thought Stan Van Gundy saved him. So if Luke Walton can prove to me, and nothing against Luke, he's a young coach, obviously, that he can take guys that are looking like they'll get to level A, and he gets them to level A plus 10%, plus 20%, plus 50%, that's when you've made it to me as a coach. Rick Carlisle, Mark Cuban hired Rick Carlisle for a reason, David, and they ran a formula that evaluated how players did for all of the coaches they played for, and they looked to see who had the biggest impact and as a coach. And in Mark's formula, whoever came up with the formula, it was Coach Carlisle. So that's why I first hired him. That's one of the reasons why I hired him. And that's probably why I continued to keep him, and he's proven to be right again, of course. Rick's done a great job with that team.
You mean the fact that he beat Cleveland with Yogi Ferrell the other day?
Right, yeah, I just saw that, right. Exactly. So I think that Luke, I think what Luke did, he may have needed to do that because of what you just said before. I mean, they just needed to get free of that dark cloud in a sense where they and actually shoot the ball. They've got some really talented young players. I'm very high on Randall. I'm very high on Russell. But you can't just let them play. If you could just let guys play, what do we need coaches for? Really, what do we need coaches for? You got to teach them, and you got to grind and grind and grind. There's no way in the world you can tell me. I've been doing basketball now since I've been playing since I was 9. I'll be 52 in 2 weeks, okay? And I've been coaching since I was 20 years old exactly in college. It was my first ever kind of coaching gig at my fraternity. So I've been involved at this game for a long time, and I will tell you unequivocally, there's no way Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili are Hall of Fame players if they don't play for Greg Popovich. Okay, now there's many other guys, Rick Carlisle might have done it as well. But he absolutely taught them how to use what they currently could do and what they could ultimately get to a level that would help them win. Tim Duncan, I don't think he needed Pop to be a great player. Is he top five all time without Pop? That's a different argument that I probably would say no. He probably wouldn't have made it to that level, but he was clearly going to be a multiple-time All-Star. Not one of the best players that ever lived, in my opinion. That's coaching. And so to me, no matter your taskmaster, you're freewheeling and fun like D'Antoni is right now for Houston, you still have to teach these guys how to play, how to read, react, how to get better, how to make adjustments on the fly. And also you got to motivate. That's a huge factor to fight through the grind that is the NBA. Requires more than just let's go have a good time.
Let's roll through some big picture items. And by the way, David's referenced his book. If you didn't hear it early, it's coming out in February, right at the end of the month, probably on the 28th. So keep an eye out. It's basketball.
On Amazon.com, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be great. Who players that you think of differently today than you did October 1st?
All right, so the first one I'm going to say, it's a little bit of a qualifier because I actually picked him to be my most improved player, I think, anyway. And I've been high on him since he first came out, and that's Harrison Barnes. So I don't know that Harrison Barnes is going to be what I thought he might be, which is one day good enough to play on Team USA. Not necessarily to start, but I thought he had the kind of talent that could earn his way onto a Team USA team that competed for gold medals. I feel like he's showing some signs of that that we didn't really get a chance to see in Golden State, no different than how could you have seen James Harden being this player when he was sixth man for Oklahoma City and the role they used him in. So I did not penalize Harrison. I had some arguments with some of my good friends at ESPN who cover the Warriors, like Ethan Sherwood-Strauss, who just didn't see it. And I said, well, of course you didn't see it. How could you? They had too many other guys on the team. But I think that there's more there. He's still young enough to get better. Joel Embiid, I saw Joel when he was in high school and immediately texted my buddy Masai Ujiri on, you must know about this kid, whatever, because I was very impressed with him when he was 18 years old. But the level that he's at, not fair for me to say that I could have seen this. And then a guy that I referenced before, and I have a few others too, but I watched Kevin Love play for Minnesota in his last full season there, and I thought he was one of the best five players in the world. He did it in a unique way. I thought he had a bit of a diva mentality, which I didn't love, but he was extraordinary. And he impacted games in many, many ways. That team, their starting five, I think, had the second best plus minus in the league behind Miami's starting lineup. Their bench was the worst in the league, literally the worst. And I thought Rick Adelman had already kind of retired, even though he was essentially the coach. And I thought Ricky Rubio was incredibly bad in fourth quarters because no one ever had to guard him. So it made it very tough for them. But Kevin Love was incredible. And I thought those days were gone. He just seemed to be a very much a role player for that team. And going into 2017, I thought Kevin Love looked like a very dominating player again. He looked like a kind of guy that could be the MVP of a series. And go back a few years ago, remember when Boston won their championship with KG and Ray and Paul Pierce?
Yep.
Okay, so each one of those guys was MVP of their last three series. It wasn't just one guy for all three. It was a different guy three times, okay? To me, Kevin Love looked like that guy that could be the MVP of even potentially the NBA Finals, depending on how the matchups were and how teams guarded you. And if he was the guy that could average 24 a game, we know he can. And even though he's had a bad January and the team is struggling, he's someone that going on October 1, I did not expect that to happen.
Interesting. Teams that you think should be being talked about more than they are right now? Or team?
Well, I referenced before, and I'm glad that we got to it. I looked at Minnesota's team. I watched them play the Magic last night. I've seen them a couple of times recently. They're starting five, and of basically all their bench guys, there's only one dude that's not in his first contract, and that's Rubio, who I think is a candidate to be traded. They get themselves, I don't know who it would be. I've not done the math and the trade formulas and all that kind of stuff. If they got themselves a better scoring point, I think that they have huge potential. First of all, I think they have a real shot to make the playoffs this year, probably just in the eighth spot, but certainly possible the eighth spot, maybe seventh. And then going forward, I just feel like they can be dynamite because they're very young, they're so talented. Offensively, they're really coming around, and most importantly, I just thought last year, I just think I've said this before, maybe on your podcast. I think Sam Mitchell is a terrible coach. Great guy, great assistant coach, terrible head coach. And I watched that team play a lot last year, and I just felt like they were talented and clueless. And Thibodeau's got a ton of work he has to do to teach these guys how to win in the NBA. And I think 6 weeks ago or so, I thought that they were the team that would really come around these last few months. They're showing some signs. It's not fair to say they've got to figure it out, that's for sure. And who knows what the trade world does for them. But they're exciting to watch. And Wiggins is nowhere close to his potential right now as an overall player. He's a scorer. And last night he just would not let his team lose. But I think there's more that he can bring to the table as he starts figuring that out. And that's what Coach Thibodeau's job is.
Do you think Chris Dunn is good enough? Or do you think they have to restart that season?
Oh, they got to find somebody else. Yeah, if they say we don't care about the playoffs this year, they can keep Rubio if they want to, obviously, and they can continue to develop Dunn. If they feel like if we get a chance to get someone that can really push us to definitely make the playoffs and to be around longer than that, Dunn's not the answer for that. There's obviously much better players out there. I don't know what they're going to choose to do. But I wouldn't want to change the core. I've always thought Levine was better off. I always thought Zach Levine was Jamal Crawford. I thought there was a 50% chance he'd make the NBA, 50% chance he wouldn't make it because of IQ and just knowing how to play. But also, I didn't trust Minnesota's culture. This was a year ago. Tom Thibodeau definitely saved Zach Levine's career for sure. He's going to be an NBA player. We know that. He's going to be a good NBA player. What role he plays, I still think is up for grabs. I still feel like he's better off as your six-man scorer. Really limit what he has to think about doing. Let him just turn him loose. The Jamal Crawford type, the James Harden type, who's at Oklahoma City, be that guy. The original Bobby Jackson role, right, back in the Sacramento Kings days. I think that he's best served for that. But that's a nice problem to have if you're not sure if you want to start him or not, as long as you have him. And then Wiggins and Towns, and I love Gorgui Dieng, Bielsa. I just think they have some talent. And Muhammad's always a guy that I very much liked as an off-the-bench guy if he's utilized effectively, because he's a power guard. He's a power wing, and you can't just throw him out there and play. You've got to help him. You got to create offensive situations that allow him to take advantage of his very powerful athletic body, and you got to keep him in shape because he can sometimes get heavy. And I just think Coach Thibodeau will do all those things.
So you don't have any – if they have to decide between LaVine and Wiggins at some point, that's a no-brainer to you.
I mean, I would – yeah, no-brainer. I would choose Wiggins. But I don't know why they would have to choose that. I mean, I understand your point. I think that team is going to be best served when they get themselves a primary one, a Wiggins and a Towns in your starting lineup, and LaVine's your scorer off the bench. And if they take care of the role players the right way – that team's competing for championships in a couple of years.
More with David in just a second. Something interesting just came across the wire I'm asking about in regards to some Clipper stuff, Portland, and then we'll talk some Warriors and Spurs before we wrap. I do want to remind you, if you're going to any type of event, whether it's a sporting event, a concert, a theater event, SeatGeek is the answer. It's an app, it's on your phone, and it's incredibly easy to use. So you just go download the SeatGeek app, Android or iPhone, whatever it is. SeatGeek then compiles all of the tickets in your area to that event, or if you're going to be traveling, and tells you what the best tickets are with their ticket score system, which is great. So if you don't know the venue that you're attending, they're able to look at the pricing and tell you which one is going to be the best ticket price for your dollar. Finally, it's on your phone. It's secure. It's guaranteed. So it takes away all of the multiple searching spots, not knowing venues, and then worrying about being taken. SeatGeek makes the ticket buying process for you simple. It's using technology to make it easier. And with the promo code LOCKED, you get $20 back after your first purchase. So go to SeatGeek, click on the settings tab, and then enter in the promo code LOCKED. And when you find the first event you want to go to, they'll send you a $20 check. SeatGeek, making ticket buying easy for you through your mobile device. So make sure you download the SeatGeek app now. Portland's interesting right now because they're in theory, they're underperforming. I mean, it's a whole really detailed conversation.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is the kind of the storyline all year long was, well, maybe Lillard and McCollum can't be good enough defensively. And now for the last month, they're like the seventh best defensive team in the NBA. Like, Terry Stotts has done this 2 years in a row where he's gotten his guys to suddenly start defending. Is there any reason, though, why that backcourt is fundamentally flawed, as great as it is offensively, is fundamentally flawed to carry a team?
No, I don't have any problem at all with those guys carrying. I don't think they are the problem for if they can't get to whatever level it is. The days of your two guard has to be 6'5" or 6'7" or whatever, I just think those days are gone. The idea that, well, you can't just have shooters, that's ridiculous. That's what Barkley says. It's ridiculous. Those guys are nightmares to defend. I give Portland a lot of credit and Coach Stotts a lot of credit for what they did with CJ and really with Damian too, although he was a high draft pick. The background of those guys is very interesting, they weren't at high major schools and all of that. I think they have other issues they've got to take care of, and I think they probably will. I think it's a well-run franchise, and your point's so good about what Coach Stotts has done. That's what coaching is. You're given a deck of cards in a sense, right? The beginning of the year, lots of variables occur with injuries and what other teams are doing. The way teams may defend you differently in year two compared to year one. And then you've got to adjust. And I feel like they're starting to do that. They've got some other additions they have to make. You've got to have some size at the rim. You know, you've really got to have, I mean, Rudy Gobert and that team is a huge game changer, because now you can absolutely attack with those little guards outside. The worst thing you can do with little guards is try to make them play conservatively. The best thing you can do is to let them loose. But if you let them loose and let them go try to make plays, there's going to be some rim attacks without question. You can't do both. And if you're going to have rim attacks, and the NBA especially, you better make sure you've got the big guy to clean it up. And as a simple example, I was telling someone this last night. I help out a high school team where my son goes. We have a 6'10 center who's a good player. And he's a big guy. And we've really worked with him on talling up, right? Not jumping to block shots, just tall up. And I was telling a friend of mine as we've won like 17 of 19 games, we're really hot. But I think we played some teams that are getting good shots. They just can't finish against our 6'10 guy. And that's by design. We are intentionally attacking you, knowing that we're going to force you to think you're open, and your little 6'2" guard or 6'4" wing who doesn't see 6'10 in practice every day or most games, and this is high school, this isn't even AAU, which is a higher level, you're going after our 6'10 guy, he's just going to tall up and you're probably going to miss. But we're going to play him at some point that's going to be able to make that shot consistently. They see 6'10 all the time, maybe on their own team, and I think that team's going to probably beat us. And so it's the same kind of thing in Portland. You can't play the kind of defense over the long haul the way you could with the kind of guys you have that are small without some real rim protection. And that's, I think, a long-term challenge. Ultimately, they know exactly what they need, and I think eventually they'll be able to fix it.
I have two things I want to wrap up with you on, largely because I just feel like we do these podcasts and we don't talk about the Spurs and Warriors, and it's almost, I think it should be an obligation for all of us. But something really interesting happened while we were talking with one of your colleagues, and I want to get your take on this because I think this is really interesting. So Tom Haberstroh, ESPN, does a great job, and he wrote a piece today about injuries. And in that article, Doc Rivers' quote is saying, "We were just behind," explaining why it took so long for the Clippers to invest in modern injury prevention. Dudley retweeted it. NBA player Jared Dudley retweets it. "I talked about this years ago." I think this is an incredibly interesting moment in how aware players are of what each other organization is doing and how they're being, whether their organization's in a position to put them in the best place.
Okay. So what's your question? Because I have a lot of things I could talk about with
that. Well, I just maybe just kind of leading it into a conversation on how aware players really are about, you know what, my medical staff here is not great, or my team's not developing talent, or things that I'm not sure we all realize that the players are that in tune to.
Ah, okay. Great direction to take. So I think universally, young players are clueless. They aren't necessarily always trusting, which is an important point. They don't necessarily think that their coach is the best coach and their management staff's the best. And obviously they're happy they got drafted if that's what happened. But they just tend to kind of go along with it. And how is that different than most young people? But as they experience life and make friends on other teams, here's one simple anecdote of what I mean on a very, very small level. At the end of Kevin Martin's first year playing for Rick Adelman and the Kings, but he didn't really play at all that year. That next summer, he was in my gym with Udonis Haslem, who had just finished his second season with Stan Van Gundy's Miami Heat. They lost in the Eastern Conference Finals to the Pistons. And having talked to both of them all year long, before and after every game, I knew what was going on in Miami's practices. I knew what was going on in Sacramento's practices, but they didn't know what was going on in each other's practices because they don't talk about stuff like that. So I remember I took them to a little Greek place by the gym, and I had them walk each other through what they did in practice. And Kevin was absolutely stunned that the Heat spent more time in almost one practice on defense than the Kings might have spent throughout a month or two. It just wasn't what Rick cared about. Adelman was an offensive guy. He ran a gorgeous, beautiful offensive system. Stan Van Gundy was hit the breadth and depth of what he did totally outdid anything that Rick would do on the overall. Rick was mostly just focused on the offense. So that was an eye-opener for Kevin, without question, and for Udonis to make him realize, oh, okay, we all, you know, that Udonis was used to it. He played for a very famous high school coach who's now a top 20 coach in South Carolina, Frank Martin. He played for Billy Donovan, which is how good Billy was at Florida, and went to a national championship when he was a sophomore. He was kind of used to the guy that he coached a lot. And that's just one of many examples of these guys, as they age, they realize the league is different from city to city, coach to coach, management to management. And on the medical staff, too, they assume it's going great. So all of a sudden, it's not. I've had a player, I don't want to go into, I can't name things here, but I've had players who were told they didn't have stress fractures when they did. I've had players told that they had a ligament injury when it was a deep bone bruise, and so the treatment they were getting was the exact wrong treatment. And instead of being back in 5 days, they were back in 15 because of the treatment. Literally, the team screwed them up, and on and on and on. And so as these guys experience life, they realize that it's not these teams are not commodities. And the Spurs are the shining example for all of us of what the best franchise looks like, you know, A to Z.
All right, before we wrap up, and I appreciate all your time, David's book coming out at the end of February, Basketball is Jazz. Make sure you grab it. Obviously, these stories are great, and there's more of them in the book. I just kind of open-ended, like, where's your wow factor on what the Spurs and the Warriors are doing, and what is that wows you about both of them? I don't want to take, particularly the Warriors, who right now people are missing, I think are kind of, yeah, whatever. They're the second team in the history of the game to be number one offensively and number one defensively. And if people are watching it closely, it's actually what's really stunning on that note, not to just monologue on my own question, is it's not close anymore. Like, I don't know if people are paying attention, but I think they're now offensively and defensively, they're moving to more, they're 2 points better than any other offense per 100 possessions in the NBA. Like, that's an incredible amount.
Yeah, right. That's a big number. So what I like about, I mean, I could go on and on about both franchises, but there's a similarity there's a thread that I want to address. When San Antonio beat Miami badly, right? A couple of years ago, right? 3 years ago, I guess it was now.
Yeah.
When they just ran out of the gym those last three games, I was there for the games in Miami, all routes. Jackie McMullen, I may have mentioned this to you before, David. Jackie McMullen wrote this amazing article called Summertime, where I actually had said to Henry Abbott, I just think I witnessed the best basketball in the history of basketball. I can't believe what I just witnessed. I'm blown away. Over the course of a year, Henry kind of let that comment percolate until he said to Jackie, you know what? Thorpe thinks it's the best basketball that's ever been played. You're buddies with Pop. Do you think he'd maybe talk to you? This is a year later, by the way. This was before the playoffs the following season, but they're about to play the Clippers, a series they lost in seven games. He said, do you think you can get Pop to talk about this? And Jackie's amazing. She did. And Pop gave her, and the article ended up being my favorite article that I've ever read regarding basketball. He called it Summertime, where he let his guys just play. Now, obviously, he had done a ton of coaching to get to that point. They knew to beat Miami's speed, he had to unleash all of his beasts, let them go. And I tell you that to talk about Golden State, because I think that's the best thing Steve Kerr has done. I don't think Stan Van Gundy, who I love as a coach, would be as good in Golden State. I'm not even sure that Carlisle, who I think is great, would be as good. They're a little bit more controlling, and it works for them, and maybe they would change with that kind of talent. But I think what Kerr has done is they play Summertime every night out. They just play. Obviously, it's not disorganized street ball. There is a total method of what they're doing. But Kerr is not a heavy hand. He is a guiding jockey, right? Some jockeys know you got to steer the horse around the track, go inside, go outside, and you got to know when to go to the whip. He doesn't have to go to the whip very much for those guys. He's got a bunch of killers on that team with Draymond, Durant, Curry, Thompson. These are hungry, competitive, aggressive guys. He does what he needs to do when he needs to do it, but he's not the heavy hand. And I think that's allowed them to reach their potential now. And if it wasn't for the mistake they made last year systemically, which is to go after the all-time record for wins and win a championship, I think they probably wouldn't have gotten the record last year because they sat some guys and been rested. And I think they easily beat Cleveland in five games and are back-to-back world champions and go up for a three-peat. And I think they learned from that. And I think they're by far the best team in the league right now.
They are. What they're doing is remarkable, and they're stretching out on people right now. So it's going to be interesting. David, appreciate the time. Again, I mentioned it to open the show, but David referenced some things we talked about before for what like the most embarrassing moment I've ever had. That podcast disappeared into Never Neverland. I really sincerely appreciate your time. Keep up the great work. It's great insight. You make people think. I love when we think about the game. And I'm really excited to read the book in February. So thanks so much for the time.
My pleasure. Thanks, David. Look forward to talking to you soon.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Particularly thank you to David Thorpkins. I screwed up so badly last time. If you could send him a thank you at Coach Thorpe on Twitter, I would greatly, greatly appreciate it. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Please do that for me. It was so nice to come back on a second time. I hope you enjoyed the show. Take advantage of our sponsors. They allow you to get this podcast for free, and we really appreciate them. Indochino, the made-to-measure suit company. Indochino.com/locked. SeatGeek. Download the app and put it on your phone. Use it with the promo code LOCKED, and you get $20 back. Bloom That. I'm telling you, this is going to make you a big win on Valentine's Day. They really do a nice job with all of their, and don't cut any corners. Use Bloom That. And if you have not used Blue Apron yet, another one of our sponsors, they were not a sponsor today, but they're another one of our sponsors. We still love them. It's Lock without the E, LOCKNBA. LOCKNBA for your first three meals for free. So please support our sponsors. Tell them thank you. And thank you for tuning in today's edition at Coach Thorpe to send David a appreciative moment. Thanks. Have a good day.